This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
France, 1-for-4 in his career against Hader with a couple of walks and a couple of strikeouts. That one popped high in the air. Should be the ball game. Christian Walker in foul territory will put it away. And the Astros start the road season 1-0, scoring 5 unanswered runs to win it 5-2. Plummer, that's more like it as they finally broke through the 3-run threshold.
Yeah, they have a tendency to play well on the road, and they finally got that offense going.
All right, here we go. That was yesterday. That was kind of just a cookie-cutter, paint-by-numbers type of win for the Astros. Fell behind early. Hunter Brown straightened it out. Got a couple home runs. Got a couple timely hits. And the bullpen came in, didn't give up anything over three innings, all three. I would say Brian King is early on here, kind of embedding himself as that third guy in the bullpen behind Abreu and Hader. That was nice yesterday. That was a nice afternoon of baseball. A whole lot nicer than the day before. So we welcome you in on a Friday. I'm Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne.
It's like any other normal win that you see the Astros get, where Yordan doesn't get a hit and Jose Altuve strikes out 5 times.
That's what good teams do. They overcome the poor performance of their superstar players.
I'll tell you what, man. It was a good win yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to harp on negatives or anything, but my God, it's the angriest I've been in a while when the Twins fans behind home plate were standing cheering on, hoping for a Jose Altuve 5th strikeout. I wanted to go fight every single one of them.
Yeah, man. I told you, these are the people that cheered when I was sitting in the outfield at that very stadium last year in July.
Yeah.
It was significantly warmer than it was yesterday. And we couldn't tell from our vantage point out in the left field bleachers exactly where a pitch hit Jose Altuve. It was in the face, it was in the hand. We just knew it was somewhere in his upper extremities above the neck. And those people cheered like the animals that used to be at the gladiator shows back in the day. You know, like just cheer, like bloodlust for Jose Altuve is what that was. Yeah.
That's what they called it in ancient Rome, the gladiator show.
Yeah.
You know, taking the gladiator show today.
Hey, would you like to go? I hear it's on pay-per-view, the gladiator show, yes. It's funny you bring up Jose Altuve because I thought about that this morning. Am I more excited about the win? Because it's nice. You get your first road win. They needed that one after getting swept by the Giants, and it was really good to see Hunter Brown pitch the way he did after the first inning. He was lights out after the first inning. But am I more excited about the win or more distraught over Jose Altuve striking out 5 times in a game?
Okay, now you got to remember, too, that this goes back to last season where Jose Altuve had by far the most strikeouts he's ever had in a season.
Yeah.
He had 119 strikeouts last year. I think his high before that was 91 back in 2021. So it's not like this. This isn't so easily dismissed as, hey, it's early, guys. 162 games in the season. All right? Same people that were saying, hey, don't be freaking out about Jose Abreu. He's a notoriously slow starter. All right? Yeah. I don't know why you guys are acting like Jose Abreu being one of the worst baseball players in baseball is so awful. The flip side of it is that Altuve is still batting .321.
Yeah.
It's not like he's been bad or anything. He's just striking out. So we got to get this under control. Christian Walker showing up huge in delivering on some of the hard contact that he's had already this season.
That was good.
That was nice to see. It's nice to see that, you know, Espada and Christian Walker himself said that maybe he was pressing a little too hard trying to fit in on a new team. He's made some tweaks to his stance and his approach and everything.
Yeah.
But he'd been hitting the hell out of the ball.
Yeah.
He'd been treating that ball like an abused animal. And he'd had some bad luck. So it showed up in the form of home runs yesterday.
Well, and it came at a good time. You know, there was a here we go again element to the early part of that game when Hunter gives up the two runs in the first inning. And that Walker, and then, you know, in the top of that inning, the top of the order goes out meekly, 1-2-3. They got strike. Ryan strikes out the side in the top of the first. Then they give up two in the bottom of the first. Hunter Brown does, and you're like, well, here we go again. And Christian Walker's home run kind of was a bit of a jolt early on there. Here's what it sounded like.
This ball hit high in the air, well to left field, all the way back, and that one's gone. Christian Walker, his first Astros home run, goes into the second deck of Target Field.
Yeah, it was. He smoked that, and then Pena hits a home run the very next at bat. You had that bat a first inning, but those two guys come up big and go back to back, and now you're even again. It's a brand new game early on, and then from there, Hunter Brown kind of took that momentum from the top of that inning and applied it for the rest of the game. He was great after that. He was tremendous over his last five innings of work.
I had a moment there early in the game where I was like, don't tweet, Seth. Don't tweet. It's a long game. It's a long game. Yep. It's a long game. Going to get potentially six innings out of Hunter Brown here.
He did.
And he did. He looked kind of almost upset that at the end of the sixth inning, I think he probably knew that he was done, but was, you know, like, wanted to keep going. He was at 90 pitches.
He's at 90 pitches,
No, I mean, it's totally appropriate to take him out, but it ends up being a good day for him. It's just a rough start.
Brendan Rodgers, you know, he was basically Altuve, vintage Altuve, because he was playing second base yesterday, you know?
So
the Astros got what they've been used to getting out of second base all these many years. It was just in the form of Brendan Rodgers. He had an RBI single through a drawn-in infield to give the Astros the lead at 4-2, and then this was a nice insurance run right here.
That ball hit well to left field, sending Bader back. That ball's going to be off the wall. Rodgers is 3-for-3. Caratini's going to score. Rodgers into second, and the Astros lead 5-2. Third RBI for Brendan Rodgers.
It's one game, but if you get just average offensive play out of second base this year, because we know Altuve is going to play second base very rarely. I don't look at him as a second baseman, Altuve. He's the left fielder. The second base position is being stewarded by Brendan Rodgers and Mauricio Dubon probably for most of the time. If you get the occasional game like that out of Brendan Rodgers, that's a win, man.
Double out of Mauricio Dubon. That's a
Dubon had a double yesterday.
He finally got a hit, and it was an extra base one.
Boy,
the extra base hits are starting to come.
Yes,
the Astros were the worst team in the league over the first several games in terms of number of extra base hits, but these last couple games, at least, they've started hitting with power.
Yeah, and none of it's been Altuve, Paredes, and Yordan at the top of the order either. You know, it's those guys are going to hit. They're gonna hit for power eventually. I like to think they will.
I think when it comes to some of the offensive woes so far, I mean, there are so many guys, including Yordan, that are tweaking things with their swings that Yordan's gonna be just fine.
Yeah,
Yordan's been through lulls before, and they usually don't last very long.
No.
So I'm good to go.
I'm still not worried about Yordan, and there's no solution. Like with Yordan, like he's been for his career, he's been one of the best hitters in baseball, and I'm not just talking like power and statistically. Like technically, he's typically had a very good eye. You know, like he's not an undisciplined hitter. He's a very disciplined hitter. That has not shown up early on this season. He struck out twice again yesterday. I knew that Jose Altuve's, I'll put air quotes around this, accomplishment of striking out five times in a game had a name, and I knew it was a sombrero, The golden sombrero is striking out four times in a game. The golden sombrero. Do you know what the sombrero that you get for striking out five times in a game is? I just Googled it.
And before anybody freaks out, just so you know, Altuve has had a couple of four strikeout games before in his career. Yeah. So this isn't, it's not like anything that just has never happened until he's now an old man. He's had bad games in terms of strikeouts.
You, and I'll let you answer the sombrero question, but your point is very good that he did it in front of a hostile, disgusting crowd like that one is what makes it hurt. But go ahead.
So, let's see. A golden sombrero is four strikeouts?
Is four, yeah. Golden
a sombrero. Is a sombrero three strikeouts?
I don't have three in front of me here. So it's a golden
sombrero. The logic, I think the first answer that you would win on Family Feud if people were asked that question, most respondents probably say a platinum sombrero.
It is a platinum sombrero. Yes, Seth, good job.
Thank you.
Do you have your bell?
Steve Harvey.
Do you have your, good job. A platinum sombrero is what people call five strikeouts in a game. Other terms you might also hear. I like this one better. The Olympic rings for five strikeouts. It's five circles.
I'd say, let me tell you, both of those things sound like some kind of an illicit act that you might pay for.
I feel like you would find a platinum
sombrero. You want a platinum sombrero? Maybe some Olympic rings?
Somehow, if we did a little journey over to Urban Dictionary, we would find a different definition.
Walking through Times Square, Rube with a heavy piece of straw sticking out of my mouth. Just got off the bus.
Oh, my God.
I only got $20 in my pocket. Sounds like a good deal for this platinum sombrero.
Yes. So Jose Altuve making history yesterday.
Flash forward to Seth crying in the shower on the floor.
After the platinum sombrero.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. Of course, you can watch us on YouTube and Twitch if you haven't gotten onto that train as well. We appreciate the YouTubers.
For those of you
the
watching,
yeah.
They just saw my breakfast of Greek yogurt
with
grapes in it and a plain bagel.
It's been in your mouth for half of the last segment. Well, you've done a nice job of eating during the first segment.
It keeps me from interrupting you. No, I just ate little bits of the bagel, and that gives me 30 seconds to chew.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. What kind of bagel again?
Just a plain bagel.
I'm a plain bagel guy too. This is the show of the plain bagel. You know what? I hate the everything bagel. Who eats
that? Yeah, what is it about that? It's almost, it just seems like it should be awesome, but it feels like you're eating a pantry.
Well, there's two things about it that I don't like. One, it's got so much stuff on it that you're cleaning up after yourself after every bite. There's something falling off of it after each bite. The other thing is, one of the everything things that's on there has a very kind of rancid, garlicky taste to it.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and it just overrides everything else. It's like the obnoxious person in a room full of cool people.
They put oregano in it or something. It's some weird herb that doesn't go with breakfast.
Yes, like I'm at a bar, and I'm like, man, I'm really enjoying nine of these people, but this one a-hole over here is ruining the whole thing. He smells like garlic, this guy. Yeah,
you guys don't call me the everything bagel, do you?
No. You're not the everything bagel. Don't worry, you're not the everything bagel.
Thank God the everything bagel's gone.
I kind of like that.
Thank God Seth goes to bed early. I can only have so many everything bagels.
No. We talked about that when we were at the Super Bowl. Like, man, why doesn't Seth stay up later? It would be fun.
Did you guys? Is that what you were talking about while I was sleeping?
The whole time
getting
behind
ready to deliver a platinum sombrero of excellence in the morning show.
The comment was made a couple of times about how Seth would add to this room right now. Yeah, you are the best of the plain bagels, my friend.
I sacrifice for the people by going to bed early.
You are an early bed guy. Yep. All right, we are off and running here, man. This is fun. The Astros win yesterday. Rockets have OKC tonight. That'll be fun. We actually have a game. We have a basketball game tonight in town that we can, with a straight face, say, could this be a preview of the Western Conference Finals? How about that? So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in headlines. Texans news yesterday. This is interesting because people are trying to connect the dots to the stadium situation. The Texans are seeking a new location for their headquarters and practice fields. This is actually the norm in the NFL. The Texans are one of the few teams that have all their headquarters and whatnot near the stadium. What does this mean? Are there dots to be connected with the stadium situation? We will discuss that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios,
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the big news item that was making the rounds yesterday, Jonathan Alexander of the Chronicle had an exclusive on this. Good job, Jonathan. That the Texans are seeking a new location for their headquarters. So it would be the headquarters, it would be the practice fields, the weight rooms, the meeting spaces. A lot of these things in the stadium that they've done major upgrades to over the last couple of years, you know, the cafeteria, all these things, that they are looking for somewhere in Houston to kind of separate the business and the practice side, where essentially the stadium, for Texans purposes, would be a game day venue only. And this is what, Seth, most of the league has, an arrangement like this. I didn't realize that the Texans were one of only four teams that house their headquarters and their practice facility in the same either building or area as their stadium. The other three are Cincinnati, New England, and Carolina. But this is, and Hannah McNair has some interesting quotes here that we'll get to in a second. But what were your initial thoughts when you saw this yesterday?
And just as a quick bookkeeping part of it too, I wonder if, I know there are teams specifically where they have a facility, but it's next to the stadium. So it's not like it's, so there's a lot that are in the same geographic location. Yep. Like the Bills are there, they're just not in the stadium.
Yeah.
I'd honestly, from a player's perspective, I went to visit the Falcons once as a free agent, and I was blown away by how cool it was there in Flowery Branch, which is way north of Atlanta. And I don't know about how many miles it is. I just know that with Atlanta traffic, it takes like the day I was there, it seemed like it took 90 minutes
it's
to get
brutal.
From Flowery Branch to
it's
Atlanta.
Brutal.
It's in the suburbs, you know, and it's in like the country suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a college campus. They had their huge bubble. They had their facility that overlooked the practice field. They had multiple fields. They had athletic dorms, like the equivalent of college athletic dorms, where their younger players or guys who had just been signed could actually stay there during training camp. They stayed right there, like in dorms, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really, really cool. And it's a nice environment because you're secluded. You can just dial in. I think guys with families probably appreciate just being able to be closer to work but still have a house with a yard and everything.
Yeah.
So I could see the advantages to it strictly from a player's perspective. From the community's perspective, I don't think it affects anything one way or the other. Most people, by and large, they never see the players working out or going to meetings anyway, so whether they're doing it at the stadium or not. This does seem like maybe the most reasonable solution if the Texans feel like, man, it's a constant distraction having all this stuff going on. Well, we're trying to just conduct our business, but all off season long, you got circuses and dirt tracks being constructed and everything else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know how many people understand the totality of the relationship the Texans have with NRG Stadium. They are tenants in that stadium. You know, the Rockets control Toyota Center, like all those concerts and everything. Like the Fertittas get the benefit of anything that happens in the Toyota Center. That's just the nature of the arrangement that the Rockets have with that venue. It's not that way for the Texans. They're a tenant there the same way Disney on Ice is a tenant there and the rodeo is a tenant there and whatnot. And Hannah McNair has some interesting quotes in here. She says this, it's disruptive. It's something we struggle with throughout the year. We don't know who's going to be there, meaning in the stadium, whether it's a contortionist or Princess Disney on Ice, whatever it is, you're constantly walking through it. And the money quote here is, we've outgrown the space. And that's kind of the feeling I got, is that, like, this is kind of the next step in being a big boy franchise is having the headquarters like Dallas has with Frisco. I'm curious with the Atlanta one, Seth. What's it called again? Flowery Branch, the city that it's in? What's the equivalent for Houston in terms of how far outside of the city that, or how far from the stadium it was?
Oh, gosh. You know what? There might be a lot of similarities in terms of the fact that just Atlanta is very spread out and everything.
It's like Katy? Is it like,
I would think, it's almost even, forget distance, but almost just the way things feel.
Yeah.
It almost would feel like it's outside of Katy, because Katy's become so big that it felt to me, I mean, it was out next to one of those big dammed lakes up there, D-A-M-M-E-D lakes.
Yep.
There was, they were telling me about how much hunting and fishing there was all around.
Mm.
So it It in terms of how it felt like you were down in Manville, maybe even before Manville started growing up.
Yeah.
So it's something like that. It was for them to get a similar experience but not have to drive forever, I think they'd want to go south.
Yeah.
Like towards Manville way.
That's where a lot of guys are to begin with because the stadium is south right now, you know, compared to things. Our stadium's not downtown like Atlanta's is. So we've outgrown the space is an interesting quote. Now, is there any connection here?
It's, real quick.
Yeah.
So Flowery Branch to downtown Atlanta is 1 hour, 9 minutes, 44 miles.
Okay.
So that's obviously with traffic because it's interstate the whole way.
So you're right. So that's like a little beyond Katy, you know, so 44 miles. I mean, the stadium then truly becomes just a game day thing, you know, if you're...
I mean, it's right next to Nantahala National Forest.
Yeah,
it's really like, it's a nice country environment.
You sound like as you were describing it, I'm like, yeah, this sounds like Huntsville. Like, you're out even beyond the woodlands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
it's on Lake Lanier, too.
Okay.
So at any given time, you can go fishing and a corpse can float up while you're fishing.
It's a beautiful thing. You can
Doesn't Lake Lanier have the most, it's got a ridiculous number of
does
drownings.
It?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Those damned lakes, they're really dangerous because they get deep real fast.
Yeah.
You know,
it's an old
ravine that was filled in. So it goes from wading height to 200 feet deep.
Yep. And we know the Rockets, if we're trying to draw a local analogy here, they just opened their own practice facility this past summer. 75,000 square feet. It's 10 minutes from Toyota Center. $70 million to build. This sounds like a bigger project just because you're talking about practice football fields as opposed to practice basketball courts. You're moving your whole headquarters there as well into some sort of facility. I guess the connection, if I had to guess, educated guess, the connection to any stadium project with NRG, a renovation of NRG, is that at least you're clearing out the business space in there to make the stadium a little bit more modular for whatever it is you're trying to do to make NRG. Right now, the first the stated goal by the McNairs, by the county, by the rodeo, is that we want to make NRG Stadium into something state-of-the-art. The ability to do that is, to me, a little bit dubious just based on logistics, if nothing else, how the stadium is structured now and the necessity of finding the time to renovate it when that stadium is being used the entire year long.
There's some things that, in terms of one thing that C.J. Stroud and others have noted, is they'd love to get people into the stadium earlier.
Yes.
And, I mean, you just think about your game day experience going in. And, all right, you got to go through security, all that. And there's ways to maybe make that more efficient. But then once you pass security, okay, single file on these ridiculously long escalators. And don't worry, we'll all get you in there by kickoff.
Single
it's
file
difficult.
To get through a second gate for the right to go up that escalator.
Yeah,
like, it's like,
yeah.
There's like three or four bottlenecks to get into the stadium. And if you've seen SoFi... Or if you've seen the renderings, like Cleveland's going to build a new stadium here soon, and the artist's renderings, you know, which are AI generated, like drone type videos of what the whole space would look like, you watch and see what their renderings are of the get into the stadium experience, and you're like, oh my God, that is absolutely delightful. It's this wide open area that basically just feeds directly into the stadium. It's incredible.
That's it's one of those things too. I'm sure when they break all this down, it's all the little minor inconveniences that end up adding up to the total experience.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some stuff that even you yourself might not feel like, oh, yeah, whatever, that's not a big deal. Why do it all adds up, and you don't even consciously necessarily. I think they want to make it as easy to just go park your car, have a few drinks, and then just get into the game.
That's it. Couple more.
I don't. You know, when I was at Buffalo, though, this is what annoys me, though, is Buffalo had one of the oldest stadiums. And when I went to that game, I remember I did the pregame from the Buffalo game, day where it ended up raining like crazy.
2021. It was cold as hell. Yep, 2021.
But it was almost like I was looking out at the stands and wondering, how is this going to get so full right beforehand? And then lo and behold, I went out to go out. I was going to out and try to meet my brother for a few minutes before the game. I opened the door from the press box, and it was almost like it was like a cartoon. I just saw this wave of people coming towards
me.
I went right back in. I felt like that was Jon Snow about to stand up to an army all by myself or something.
Yes.
And that's an old stadium. So don't tell me how hard it is. Just show me the baby, okay? Don't tell me about the pain. spit that baby out.
That's right.
Give me my easy egress and whatever the opposite egress is.
Yes.
Ingress and egress.
Egress and ingress. Couple more quotes here from Hannah, which I think people are going to like to hear. There's probably anything that has to do with the Texans in the stadium. There's probably a bit of PTSD over what happened with the Oilers back in the day. So it's always good to hear the McNairs say what we know they're feeling about Houston. Hannah says in this article, I think most of us in Houston remember that feeling back in the 90s, and we don't want to experience that again as a city, referencing the Oilers leaving for Nashville. Personally, this is Hannah, personally, for the families, for businesses, it left a hole in the heart of Houston when that happened. But the best outcome was that we were able to bring a franchise to Houston. That's part of our duty to the city, to our fans as well, to make sure we have a good outcome here.
Yeah, I think, as I've said before, I would be really, really, really shocked if the McNairs ever decided to move away from Houston, just because I know how important it is to Cal to carry on his father's legacy. And his father, the first meeting we ever had as a team with Bob McNair, like when the players first met Bob McNair and Bob McNair and it came in and spoke to us, we were down in the bowels of the Astrodome because our locker room was in the Astrodome that first offseason. And he basically told us a story of how the Oilers had left and a few years went by and he's looking around and nobody's bringing a team. So he said, almost as a matter of civic duty, we got to get a team in here. And so it's never, with Bob McNair, obviously, he treated it like a business because he's not a dummy. But it was as much, it seemed to me as a player, something he felt was a civic obligation or duty as well as a business venture.
Yeah, and the McNairs, they don't shy away from that. This generation doesn't shy away from that. I agree with what you said. I'd be shocked. I mean, I'd be stunned if it even got close to something where there was a threat to move. I would be mildly surprised if there's ever even any saber rattling by Cal McNair and Hannah McNair over the, to the extent that they're looking at other cities or something like that.
Katie Blackburn, the executive vice president of the Bengals.
Yes, the anti-McNair.
She just flat out said, sure, it's totally possible.
The Bengals lease is up after this year. This story pops up yesterday. And this Katie Blackburn, who's already pissed off Trey Hendrickson by saying, you should be happy with whatever we offer you, you know? I have a quote
this
right here.
This is the quote. You we got could, it? I guess, go wherever we wanted after this year if we didn't pick up the option. So, we'll see. Like I said, all these things will be done in due course.
Yeah. We play it day by day like everything else. We just have discussions and then make decisions at the appropriate time.
She's treating this like I treat conversations with my wife. I tell her all the time, listen, Brandy, I'll pick up and leave, damn it.
Seth, yeah. Katie Blackburn of his relationship.
That's how I lay down the law, damn it.
Yeah.
God, I hope she's not listening.
Withholding your services, yes. Yeah. All right, but I, look, as someone who covers training camp, Seth, would you be excited to cover training camp at a different facility here? Yeah, Manville or wherever it is. Kind of pumped. It's something different, I might not be as excited when the commute out of Katy or Manville or Huntsville or wherever it is, whateverville. Yeah.
Get yourself a nice Airbnb, just have it to make a vacation of it.
That's not bad. That's not a bad idea at all. All right. Payne and Pendergast, you can text us 713-572-4610. People weighing in on where they think this thing should go. Someone suggesting Lake Jackson. Yeah, that would be great. Go to the lake during the day, a little practice in the morning, then to the lake during the day, a little water skiing.
We might have to go further out. Yeah, Lake Jackson might be nice. That's a good idea, too. Yeah,
a lake.
Well, Manville, compared to Flowery Branch, is still way closer. Commute time right now is 28 minutes from Manville.
It's not bad. 288 is way easier to use. I used to live down that way.
So this would be more like, if you wanted the Flowery Branch equivalent, you might be going out to Angleton or West Columbia.
It's pretty far, man. When you said it's an hour and whatever, oh, man.
That's during traffic, though.
Yeah, that's true. It's Atlanta traffic, too.
7:30 in Atlanta, it's 7:35 a.m. right now, so.
All right, we've got other Texans-related news we'll get to in headlines. We'll recircle back to the Astros and their win over the Twins yesterday. Rockets, big one tonight. NFL news, lot to get to in headlines. We'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
France, 1-for-4 in his career against Hader with a couple of walks and a couple of strikeouts. That one popped high in the air. Should be the ball game. Christian Walker in foul territory will put it away. And the Astros start the road season 1-0, scoring 5 unanswered runs to win it 5-2. Plummer, that's more like it as they finally broke through the 3-run threshold.
Yeah, they have a tendency to play well on the road, and they finally got that offense going.
That was good. And then the Astros fell behind early again yesterday like they did against the Giants on Wednesday. But they, Christian Walker and Jeremy Pena, back-to-back home runs to tie the game in the second inning. Hunter Brown very much steadied things the rest of the way. His line the rest of the way after the first inning was he pitched 5 more innings and only one guy got on base. So Hunter Brown was outstanding yesterday. The bullpen was great between Brian King, Brian Abreu, and Josh Hader came in and got the save. Bullpen didn't give up no runners on base for the bullpen. Just a really good performance all the way around. Brendan Rodgers came up big with a couple clutch hits that gave them their winning runs in this game, a 2-run single and an RBI double. And the Astros get a nice road win where they didn't get anything out of their star players yesterday as far as offense goes.
I think the one thing that's clear from all of this is that Daikin has to really just get it in gear and figure out a way to make that ballpark in Houston as cold as possible all the time.
Thank you.
Because the cold weather, what was it, 42 degrees, whatever it was?
Yeah, low 40s.
It was cold. The bats were there. And look, Walker's been hitting the cover off the ball just into the wrong spots. And they've been working with him on getting the ball up in the air. But he's already got 5 hits over 110 miles per hour, which the only guy that did that the entire season last year, not hits, but he's made contact.
He struck the ball, yeah.
He struck the ball that hard 5 times already. The only guy that did it that many times all season long last year for the Astros was Yordan. So he's been hitting the ball really, really hard. He's just had some bad luck with it. But he's a guy, you know, everybody describes him as the same way it looks like when he's playing. He's kind of a stoic dude, and I think he takes it very seriously.
Yeah.
So it was already starting to wear on him a little bit, and I think he might have been pressing a little too hard or just to try to prove himself, you know, and it was frustrating him, and obviously yesterday it all worked out.
It all worked out.
Also, Chandler Rome pointed out in his article this morning that he very much appreciates having a really nice airplane to fly in compared to what the Rockies had. Rockies had just like some old commercial jet or whatever.
Are you talking about Brendan Rodgers you're talking about now?
No, I'm talking about Walker. Was it Brendan Rodgers?
Walker never played for the Rockies. Yeah.
It was. Yes. It was Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. You're right. I transposed the two people. That part of it is nice too.
Oh, that the Rockies had a janky ass plane. That he works for a classy franchise now, basically, right?
Yeah. The Astros have Tillman's old Rockets jet, right?
Oh, really? Do they? I think they have
the first airliner that Tillman had repurposed for the Rockets.
Okay.
The Astros are not using.
I've been on
Somebody
that.
Somebody correct me on the text line if I'm wrong about that. I just screwed up the minor detail of saying saying Christian Walker when I meant Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, the Rockies was the part where I was like, okay.
No. I'm glad you caught that. Thank you.
Yeah.
That article at like 3 a.m., so I was like, yes, thank you.
It happens. I've been on that the old Tillman plane. It's a nice, that's a nice setup. Altuve struck out 5 times. We're going to just drive past that.
I didn't notice at all.
We're just going to drive past that the way you drive past all the squalor in the desert.
What was that again?
Yeah, you struck out 5 times, Jose.
That damn Rockies fan base who are prejudiced
and
racist.
Twins fan base.
What the hell? What did I just say?
Rockies. You have Rockies on your brain right now.
What the hell? I think I had a stroke during the break. So that damn Twins fan base.
Yeah.
Who already despises Sean T. Pendergast.
That's right.
The racist against you.
Yes.
That were up on their feet lustily cheering for a 5th Jose Altuve strikeout.
Man.
I wanted nothing more in this life in that moment than for Jose Altuve to hit a home run.
Oh, dude, I'd have taken a ground ball out like a squibber in front of the mound. Just no strikeout. Just don't strike out. You're winning 5-2. Who cares? Just don't strike out, please.
And every ball that was like 4 inches outside the zone, they were booing like crazy that it was called a ball. Yeah. It happens.
It happens.
Platinum sombrero.
Yep. Platinum sombrero.
Five strikeouts in one game.
Hey, man, he made history. What the hell?
He did. Look, he had the most strikeouts he's ever had in his entire career last year. So it's not something that's so easily wiped away by saying, well, it's a long season, take your time. He's still batting well above 300.
Yes.
It's just the strikeouts have been a concern now going into a second season.
But he makes contact. It's good. What do you want? What do you want from Jose Altuve? No game today. They're back at it tomorrow. Spencer Arrighetti on the mound for a Saturday afternoon game. Another quick Astros note. Luis Garcia shut down for 4 more weeks. I don't know where this is going to go. But Luis Garcia was supposed to have not a rehab start, but like a live bullpen, something he was supposed to have recently. They got shut down because of elbow soreness, and they did an MRI, and they said that the solution is to rest for 4 more weeks. I hate that for Luis Garcia.
I hate it for me, because I wanted to see Luis Garcia.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
Lance? No setbacks with Lance.
No setbacks with Lance. Nope.
Yeah.
He seems to be doing fine. He's got a rehab start this weekend in Frisco for the Sugarland Space Cowboys. Or no, for Corpus Christi. So, yeah. Got sent down to Double A. Yeah.
Can't believe you screwed that up. What a moron.
The Texans-related news... Case Keenum is signing with the Chicago Bears on a one year, $3 million deal. How does that feel?
Get you some. As we know, the Texans have a history of our quarterbacks giving tutelage to Caleb Williams. Whether it's under the kind arm around the shoulder, don't worry about these dumb mistakes you made, CJ Stroud.
Yes.
9 months his elder, or Case Keenum, who's genuinely his elder.
Yeah, very much so. And that's a big reason they're signing him. If you saw Adam Schefter tweeted it yesterday, they're like, Caleb Williams gets the benefit of the same thing that C.J. Stroud has gotten the benefit from the last 2 years.
If there's one thing about Case is that Case knows how to stick around longer than people expect. Long before the days of COVID exemptions and whatnot, Case Keenum was at the University of Houston for 13 years. And it was dicey for him at the beginning of his pro career. And he ended up, he's had a way, way better than expected by many career as an NFL quarterback and occasional full-time starting quarterback.
Yeah.
But I could totally see him being a guy that sticks around like Matt Schaub did, just where people like having him in the building. They like him being able to work with not just the young quarterbacks, but it's the receivers too.
Yeah.
And being able to kind of just be a jack of all trades as a mentor to other people. Case is that guy.
How about this? How about Case was in the 2012 draft class. He was undrafted. The top two picks in that draft were Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III.
Oh, wow.
And Case Keenum has outlasted both of them by a mile. Hey, Andrew Luck just retired last year and RG3 got waived 2 years ago. Like, Andrew Luck retired after 2018. RG3's been gone for several years now, and here sits Case Keenum still just clocking in $3 million paychecks, man. Just looking around going, hey, what else can I do right now? Because a lot of people talk about Case getting into coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, I could get into coaching, entry level, which pays X, or I could be a backup quarterback in Chicago and get paid X times 10.
Not to mention however much Progressive is paying him for those commercials.
Yes.
Those insurance commercials.
Yes.
Good chance he gets another one of those commercials.
Probably so. Because you know what he is in that commercial? A backup. He's a backup in that commercial. He's not an assistant coach in that commercial. He's a backup.
I wonder how much it takes for him to get a SAG card or something. That's, I don't know if that question. Do you get a SAG card for commercials, or does it have to be movie type stuff?
Dude, I should have asked that. When I had Sean Astin in my car a week ago today, he had an AirPod in one ear because he was talking to me but listening in on the union negotiations for the Actors Guild. Yeah, he's high up in their union. So they were in like final negotiations. And so he was listening in. I should have asked him, like, hey, man, because you and I could have gotten SAG cards. If I could find the minimal thing to do to get a SAG card, they get good benefits.
Do they really?
Through the Screen Actors Guild.
Do they get a pension?
It's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to text my close personal friend and union leader labor leader, Sean Astin, and find out. I'll find out today.
So Case will be, he's 37 years old this year.
Okay. And is not going
to... I bet he goes, what's the over-under on number of years he goes and is kind of a mentor? Because I could see him be like a Matt Hasselbeck type, you know, Matt Schaub, some of these guys that have really stuck around just because people really like their whole demeanor in the room.
39 and a half, his age for retirement. You go over or under? Do you think he sticks around for at least a couple more years?
I'll say under just because, I don't know, as his kids get older and everything, he might just start feeling like it's time to move on in life.
It's a good number, but I think it's a good number because I put it out. But I would go under on my number as well. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. We got a lot of stuff to get to. We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. He talked about the rebuild of the offensive line. Is somebody up for a contract extension sometime soon? And how did it feel to bring in C.J. Gardner-Johnson? We got a lot to get to with the Texans GM. We had him on yesterday. We'll play the highlights for you coming up next